Hello, and thanks for joining us today for our monthly legal podcast with Missouri Press Association Hotline Attorney Jean Manicky. This is Dawn Kitchell, Education Director for Missouri Press, and today Jean and her guest Andy Waters are going to be talking about the liability issues involved in online open forums. Andy is Vice President for Interactive Media with the Columbia Daily Tribune. Each month, Missouri Press is bringing you a new legal podcast on issues important to Missouri's newspapers. If you have further questions about topics covered in these podcasts or any newspaper-related legal questions, Jean is available to give advice to active members of the Missouri Press Association at no charge. At the end of this program, we'll provide contact information for Jean, and you can always find that information on our website, www.mopress.com. Jean Manicky has served as the Missouri Press Legal Hotline Attorney since 1992. Her firm, the Manicky Law Group, is based in Kansas City, Missouri. Welcome, Jean and Andy. Let's get started talking about liability issues and offering open online forums.
Hi, Andy. I'm really glad to have you here today to talk about an important issue for many of our members. A lot of people are doing online publishing, and they're actually doing online comments and blogs. I know the Columbia Tribune's doing that. Can you talk a little bit about what your experience has been in that area?
We've been doing online comments for a long time, but up until February, we were doing it in the context of our staff blogs. And the process was the software we were using forced us to do prior approval of all comments. Back in February, we went to a new content management system, and for the first time, we started allowing comments without pre-approval. Anybody could register for an account and post a comment on any story, and most of the time people were commenting anonymously. And it started to raise the question in our minds, and we've been thinking about it before, what kind of liability we face as a publisher if somebody goes online and posts a comment, probably anonymously, that's liable.
Well, it does raise some interesting questions. I know that a lot of papers do this different ways. Do you actually require people when they register to give their real names to you?
We don't. We encourage it, but most people don't want to use their real name, and we've allowed that practice because we believe, you know, through experience, that it leads to a more robust and generally lively discussion. So we allow people to make comments without disclosing their full name.
So they'll not only be listed on the website that you see on the internet as anonymous, but I think you're saying to me that you as a publisher don't even know who some of these people are.
That's right.
Well, that does raise some interesting questions. A few years ago, actually it was in 1996, so it's been several years ago, there was a law passed by Congress called the Communications Decency Act. And the effort was to deal with websites and other forum where people post comments, and to what extent the entity that controls those forum have responsibility for the comments that are posted. The courts several years ago took this issue up and decided that the people who host these online forums are not much different than bookstores who sell books that are published, and they have no control over the content of the book. And so when a libel suit is filed, the courts have always held that bookstores are not liable for libel. Only the publisher and the author are the ones who are held liable. The court extended that in their decisions to people who provide these services. And so then when the Communications Decency Act was passed, a lot of those theories were incorporated into it. And the actual statute, which is in Section 230 of the Act, said that there is not liability to a provider or a user of an interactive computer service account due to material that gets posted on there that they don't have control over. So as long as the comment is posted online and you're not approving it, then there is this defense that's available to you that you are not responsible for what gets posted there. Now, of course, you mentioned the issue about, well, what happens after we're alerted. I assume the Tribune has a mechanism whereby readers can alert you to comments that they think are libelous or of some concern?
That's right. It's pretty easy for a reader to suggest removal of a comment if they think it's inappropriate. And we also do a lot of moderation. I mean, we've found that it leads to a generally more civilized discussion and, certainly a more enjoyable experience for everybody involved if we moderate the comments and keep them from getting out of hand. So we do take a pretty active approach to that, but at the same time, you know, we have to try to keep a light touch.
When you moderate, do you mean that you just interject comments from the writers, from the staff writers, or do you mean you actually take down comments that you think are inappropriate?
We take down comments that are, you know, clearly in violation of our policy. And most of the time, you know, it's not libelous, potentially libelous material that we're taking down. It's abusive comments. That's 99% of the inappropriate comments we get are of that nature.
Well, let me say first, the Missouri court has never ruled on this issue. So we're looking at cases in other states and across the country, federal cases, to try to determine what a court would do. But there are some decisions out there where courts have held that once you become aware that there is a comment on your website that could be libelous of someone, that your failure to take that down might be deemed to create some liability for you. So I do think that you're wise to be sensitive to those kinds of issues and be concerned if you think that people are posting comments on your website that are libelous.
So did I understand you correctly that publishers who do give prior approval to comments face a little bit more risk of liability than publishers who don't have the prior approval process?
Well, let me say again that it's really clear in the Communications Decency Act that you are not liable for a comment that is on your website that is libelous if you have not seen it. I think that you are also not libelous if you take something down because you have concerns about it. But I am concerned that there are some cases where you might be held libelous. You might be held liable, excuse me, if there was a libelous content on your website and you were alerted to it and you didn't take it down. So I do think it's important that you do be aware if there is a signal given to you that perhaps there's a comment on the website that should be looked at. I can't tell you to what extent you're obligated to monitor that. I think perhaps a court would say if you undertake a duty of monitoring those on a regular basis, and perhaps you may be held to a higher standard than someone who doesn't.
So you're saying we shouldn't moderate our comments?
Well, I think that sometimes it's better for you to engage in activity to try to protect yourself than to just assume it's better to throw caution to the winds. I would always tell you that.
Well, that raises an interesting dilemma for us, because I think the comment function would fail if we didn't have some moderation of it, and I think the experience of most publishers that I've talked to is, and you know, my own experience of looking around at other comment boards and threads, is that when the comments are not moderated and they're just, you know, people are allowed to say whatever they want, the abusers take over and the interest in the comment section falls off the table because nobody wants to wade through that kind of content. You really lose the functionality, you know, the function of the comment section altogether. So it's an interesting dilemma.
It is, and I think it is important to moderate it. But I do know that the Communications Decency Act does give you this umbrella coverage that says that you're not responsible for what's there. So I think it is better to go ahead and moderate it. Know that you've got the fallback on the federal law that will give you this protection, and assume that that puts you in the best possible position you can be in.
One thing we have taken as a policy stance is that if we see an inappropriate comment, at least our current policy is that we're going to remove the comment, even if there's parts of it that aren't objectionable, rather than go in there and try to selectively edit the comment. Does that make any difference in terms of liability?
I think that makes sense. I think it's easier to just simply remove it and not try to assume that you can control what, because the comment may have something to say about a situation where you don't have all the facts. And so perhaps it's better just to simply delete the whole thing rather than to try to manipulate it so that you bring it into line. That's a really difficult thing to ask someone to do, to edit material where you don't really know the whole context of the comment that's being made.
Well, okay, so another thing we do, and we've done this for a long time, we do it in print, but it's similar. We allow anybody to call up to a phone line and make a comment, and we transcribe that and put it in print. We call it Trib Talk, and it's wildly popular, just like our comments are. I wonder if we face a different standard of liability for that process, because we are picking and choosing which comments we allow. Actually, I mean, we allow most comments, but we're taking a more active role in publishing that information.
Well, Andy, I do think that creates a different scenario. The rules in Section 230 that we talked about seem to come down that if you allow people to post material and then you only act to eliminate the things that are objectionable, you're immune from liability. But if you actually choose what gets posted, then you become a provider of content yourself and you have liability for what you've posted. So I do think that may create a little more liability than if what you do is let it all go up and just take down things that are objectionable to you down the road. You know, you mentioned to me earlier, too, the issue about copyright. Do you have problems with copyright issues on your comments?
Well, we have had a couple of cases where we thought somebody was posting copyright material and we asked them to repost. We removed the comment and asked them to repost it without the copyrighted material. A question I have is what constitutes publishing copyrighted material? Is a link enough? A lot of times, you know, someone will post a link in a comment, and we have a question whether it's linking to copyrighted material, and wonder if we face any liability for allowing that comment to stay there.
Well, that does raise an interesting question. Last month on the podcast, we talked a little bit about copyright materials, and so for people who are listening, it might be advisable for them to take a few minutes after this podcast is over to go back and listen to last month's if they haven't, because we do talk a little bit about copyright issues. But in the context of what you're talking to me about, it seems to me like if all you're doing is linking to somebody else's material, then I think that's fair use. You're not bringing it into your website. You're directing them to the other person's website. So you're not attempting to indicate that you have any kind of authorship or ownership of this material. It's clearly not yours because you're going off your site to get to it. It's being used in a news context. That's part of the fair use defense, as opposed to an advertising situation. So I think you're probably fine to let people link to material. I can see a lot of situations where some of your readers will want people to read other materials from other websites that relate to what you're discussing online. And so I think links are probably fine.
How much of the copyrighted material would they have to republish in order for it to be a violation?
I don't think we're talking about republishing. I think as long as what you're doing is linking, then I don't have any concerns about it at all. If someone, for instance, copies an entire poem or an entire speech and tries to post it on your website, I would think you might have some space issues. But as long as what they're copying and posting in their comment on your website is just a portion of something that's out there on the internet, then I think that's probably fair use too. You're allowed to take a part of something that's copyrighted and reproduce it, whether it's in your paper or whether it's in the comments section that a reader might have. And as long as they're just taking a portion of that and not reproducing the whole thing, that's clearly a fair use situation. So I have no problem with that at all either.
Okay, well, here's another question.
Okay.
There have been some cases where publishers have been asked to reveal the identity of the commenter. A lot of these have to do with court cases, and the publisher is then faced with the decision whether to cooperate with the attorney or the law enforcement agency that's asking for that information. Under what circumstances should the publisher comply?
That's a great question, Andy. Let's take a break and we'll answer it when we come back.
Hey, thanks for listening to the August MPA podcast. No, really, thanks for listening. In fact, we're so glad you've chosen to listen that we are giving away a free registration to the 143rd Annual Missouri Press Convention, October 15th through 17th at the Sheridan, Kansas City Sports Complex Hotel. All you have to do is register before Wednesday, September 9th. We'll draw one lucky winner from those who enter on or before that date and provide a free convention registration. That's a $175 value. To enter, send an email to Missouri Press Foundation's Don Kitchell at kitchell@yhti.net. That's kitchell@yhti.net. And tell her how you access this podcast from the MPA website or through iTunes. Be sure and include your full contact information and let us know if this is your first MPF podcast or if you're a regular listener. We'll draw a winner at random from all the emails received by 5 p.m. on Wednesday, September 9th. And someone's going to the 143rd Annual Convention for free. For listeners from outside the state of Missouri, you can win too. We'll draw separately for listeners outside the state, and you can win a know-it-all t-shirt. Enter the same way, but hurry. The deadline is September 9.
Andy, before we took a break, we were talking about the issue of whether you need to cooperate with law enforcement to reveal the names of commenters who have posted on your site, correct?
That's right.
That always raises concerns for me. I don't like newspapers to be seen as the arm of law enforcement. And I think any time a law enforcement agency comes to a member of the media and says, I'd like access to some of your source material, we put ourselves in a position of looking like we're working with law enforcement. And we can't do our job if our sources can't believe that they can talk to us without feeling like we're a pipeline to law enforcement. If they wanted to go to law enforcement, that's where they go to begin with. So I think that law enforcement really needs to go get a subpoena if they want something from us, and to give us the ability to determine whether we're going to go to court and fight that subpoena or whether it's a situation where we feel obligated to honor the subpoena. I am well aware of situations where there have been requests made for sources of online comments, and I have real concerns about members of the media just simply cooperating and giving those to law enforcement. You know, you raise an interesting question that came up in a slightly different context for one of our members earlier this year. They had an online comment section, and they found, or they believed at that point, that a member of city government who was in the middle of a story, was one of the actors in connection with the city government story, was going online and making comments in their stories, to their stories, that were totally opposite to what this person was saying publicly in connection with this situation. And the newspaper felt very strongly that they needed to reveal that this person who was making the comments was actually the player in this scenario, and that the comments that were being made did not track at all his public position in this situation. And so they really struggled with whether they were going to reveal this to the public, because they had in their agreement told people who signed up and took names and allowed themselves to comment on the website that their identities would never be revealed, that they would be kept confidential. And so that probably should trigger all of you to take a look at your agreement with your readers who do sign up. To what extent are you promising them confidentiality in terms of their identities when they do sign up to make comments? Maybe you want to provide in there that you will release their identity when you're ordered to by a court. Maybe you want to provide in there that under certain other circumstances you may feel the need to reveal their identity to the public. Or maybe you feel strongly that you don't want to do that. But I think that's a situation that people need to think about when they look at those agreements.
I would think that a publisher would be on pretty shaky ground if they allowed people to sign up with the expectation that they'd be their names would not be revealed, and then they were allowed just at their discretion to reveal the names for whatever reason. Yeah, that would be wouldn't necessarily be a legal issue, I wouldn't think, but it would be a credibility issue for the publisher.
Certainly, but it sure puts the publisher in a tough position when something like this comes up.
Absolutely.
Yeah. You know, I did a memo, a paper for the Press Association earlier this year that relates to a lot of the things we've talked about, and included in that is some of the operating rules for an online forum. I know that you've had a chance to look at that, and I want to be sure our members know that we will have posted that on the site, on the Missouri Press Association website, before this podcast becomes available. And for anyone who's working in this area, I think taking a look at this memo that we've done, which contains some suggested operating rules, might be really helpful to them.
Well, I can tell you it's a great memo, and it's helped me out a lot.
Thanks.
And I appreciate you writing this up. Any other pearls of wisdom that you can tell us publishers in the wild, wild west of the new online era?
Well, the thing that we always are concerned about as lawyers in terms of internet forum is the fact that once you are online, you're subject to jurisdiction anywhere in the world, theoretically. Now, granted, a lawyer will always try to limit where you can be sued at. Certainly the Columbia Tribune would be very concerned to find itself being sued in a third world country or even in England or some overseas place. But, you know, you're out there on the internet and you're publishing on the internet, and so you're worldwide. And there have been situations where courts have found that you're subject to being sued in areas other than where you would normally think that you would have to go to court just because you're on the internet. So it depends on what jurisdiction you're in, how the courts will rule. A lot of courts in the United States have found that unless you are a national entity, you're probably not going to be subject to jurisdiction in some other area like California or New York if you're based in Missouri. But I certainly can't promise you that that's what courts in other countries will do, because everyone's law is different. And that is one of the challenges about being on the internet. You are creating some potential liability for yourself, but you just have to balance that against the trade-off that you get by the additional exposure.
Well, that makes for an impossible situation for somebody who's a local operation to try to deal with that. It's a big expense to defend yourself anyway, and then to have to do it in another state would just be it would be a little too much to bear for most publishers, I would think, unless they're a big corporation.
Well, that's the good thing about the smaller companies that don't attempt to have a national exposure. The courts in the United States have been pretty good about limiting where you will be found to be under the jurisdiction of a court. The issue is always other countries where we're dealing with laws that we don't have any control over. But here again, I think the likelihood is very slim that most publishers like the Columbia Tribune would ever find themselves sued in India or Pakistan or some other third world country.
So I guess if there's a takeaway from this, it's that we probably don't have anything to worry about if we're doing the common sense things that we ought to be doing with regard to the comments, like taking them down if we become aware of anything that's libelous. And that's the main thing. If we're aware of something, of libelous material on our websites, we're going to want to take it down anyway. We just need to make sure that we do that.
I think that's probably a really good summary. The law is there to protect you. There is federal law that does say you're not liable for libelous material. But by the same token, I think you do need to moderate it, and you do need to watch it, because you do need to protect yourself.
Of course, in practice, it's not always clear whether something's libelous or not. And, you have somebody say, well, I don't go to this garage because the owner's a drunk and a philanderer, and maybe in that case it would be kind of a no-brainer to take it down, but a lot of times a lot of derogatory comments are made against a business owner, usually is the case, and it's not always clear-cut whether it's libelous or not.
Well, and of course, Andy, the answer to that is you should call your hotline attorney. Anytime you have a question, that's what I'm here for, and I'm always glad to talk with you and all the members of the Press Association and see if we can resolve the problems that come up that way.
And that's what we always do. Jean, we're glad you're there.
Thanks, Andy. It's been good to have you here today.
Thank you.
Thanks to Andy Waters of the Columbia Daily Tribune for joining Jean today. We hope this program has given you new information about liability issues involved in offering open forums. We'll post the guidelines Jean mentioned today in the newspaper toolbox section at mopress.com. A valuable benefit of membership in the Missouri Press Association is legal hotline services. Active members may contact Jean directly for advice and answers to legal issues. Jean can be reached by telephone at 816-753-9000 or by email at jmanicky@manickylaw.com. You can find this contact information anytime on the Missouri Press Association website at www.mopress.com. The website also provides links to Jean's blog and current and back issues of the Missouri Press News Magazine, which features a monthly column by Jean. This is Dawn Kitchell, and I hope you'll join us for the next legal podcast from the Missouri Press Foundation.